The following episode originally premiered on the YouTube channel, so by all means subscribe so you don't miss out on any episodes.
You're listening to the Andre Segovia Show.
Hey everyone, and welcome to another video. In this one, it's actually a hybrid video slash podcast because I don't have enough time to prep this, but I did want to share the information that was dispelled in this, I guess you could say, interview that the Apartments Owners Association did with the Pacific Legal Foundation. This was a live stream that they did, so I'm going to leave a link to the actual live stream in the video description down below for those of you watching on YouTube, and for those listening on the website, you'll find the show notes accompanying this episode at www.theandresegovia.com. You'll find embedded in there that very presentation. I'm only going to play the part of when the Pacific Legal Foundation's attorney is talking about what actions are being taken against the Judicial Council of California that enacted Emergency Rule 1, which basically stipulated zero evictions whatsoever. Basically, the eviction moratorium that goes on in perpetuity, because there really isn't any end to it. Right now, all the evictions are on hold until 90 days after Governor Gavin Newsom here in California declares that the emergency is over, and seeing that we're in a second shutdown, basically, when will that be? Nobody knows, because even though there's been a lot of stuff put into place in terms of protections for tenants and for select businesses, property owners have not been afforded the same thing. If anything, they've been stuck holding the bill, and with zero income or revenue coming in, they're also being told that they cannot shut down their operations either, which doesn't make any sense. So it's with that there was action that was being threatened against the Judicial Council of California for their unconstitutional emergency order. And we'll see how far this gets, but this is an update regards that, and it goes into the entirety of the detail of what led up to it, what all this all is, what it means to you. And there is a question and answer section after that, but I'm not going to play it here. That's why I recommend you go over to the Apartments Association website, or even the video description down below. You'll be able to find that link to go to the Q&A section so you can hear it yourself. So I recommend watching the entirety so you can learn a thing or two. But that's that. That's it for that one, for this video. So thank you so much for watching. What follows now is a segment of that long presentation that I recommend you all to check out. So thank you so much for watching, and I'll do an end cap after this.
So our speaker today, really, I wish that Al Liebowick would be able to introduce him today, because it's really Al and Dan that have played such a major role in bringing this to the attention of Pacific Legal Foundation. And anyway, they are an incredible nonprofit organization, so they do rely on your donations, and their practice focuses on the separation of powers. And anyway, so it's a powerful group, and in fighting for our rights and our freedoms and the way that actually works in America. And so our guy, he's really sharp. He graduated from Stanford Law School. He clerked for a federal judge at the U.S. District Court for the Northern District of California. And it's my pleasure to introduce to you Michael Poon. Oh, and before I introduce him, I forgot to say one thing, and that's for the questions today, you may have landlord-tenant questions, but he is not an eviction attorney. And so that is not his wheelhouse. He will not be able to answer the questions. And even if you ask the questions, I will not ask him. However, there is that blue help button on the right side, bottom right side of your screen. If you click on that, you can put in a question that pertains to this lawsuit. So ask him questions about this lawsuit. Listen to him. And if you have questions, then we'll have question and answer time after this. Thank you. So I'm turning it over to Michael. It's really a pleasure to have you. Thank you, Michael.
Thanks, Jeff, and thanks for having me. It's great to be able to speak about this topic that's affecting so many landlords. Before I begin, I just want to acknowledge the unfairness that a lot of landlords are facing right now. You hear it from great organizations like the AOA, but you really don't hear it enough, I think. It's not a matter of whether you can absorb loss. It's not a matter of whether you're near bankruptcy or you're really struggling because of this coronavirus pandemic. The question is whether we still have property rights in this country and in the state, whether contracts still matter, whether two people can still come together and come to an agreement for mutual gain and follow those terms of the agreement. And that's what's being placed on your backs right now. The idea that the coronavirus pandemic needs to be, someone needs to bear the cost, and we're just going to put it on landlords. And it's not fair. You know, if the government is going to require that you keep people in your property, they should pay you. There should be some sort of program that makes sure that you are not the one just taking on this burden. You shouldn't have to. But with that said, let's go on to the next slide, and we'll talk about Emergency Rule 1. Emergency Rule 1 is one of the eviction moratoria that is in effect in California right now. And how it works is it tells courts that they're not going to issue summonses anymore. They're not going to issue defaults or default judgments in unlawful detainer actions. This Emergency Rule 1 was issued by the California Judicial Council, which is an agency within the judicial branch of the California state government. And it's responsible for administrative things inside of the judiciary. Things like it'll issue rules on things like the format of briefs, minor deadlines, small procedural matters. And what they've done in Emergency Rule 1, of course, is they've taken on a much larger role and said, we're just not going to hear eviction cases anymore. There are two important parts of Emergency Rule 1 to know beyond the fact that it stops courts from hearing unlawful detainer actions. One is that it doesn't have a specified end date. It is pinned to the emergency declaration regarding the coronavirus pandemic. So it sunsets 90 days after the end of the declaration of emergency. And that is, there's no end in sight for that. And two is there is facially a public health and safety exception to Emergency Rule 1. So the idea is if you have some sort of public health and safety problem with a tenant that requires you to evict them, you would be able to do that. But the problem is that there is no particular procedure for how to do this. It's the application of the exception is at the discretion of the court. So it's really not a very functional exception in our view. So that's Emergency Rule 1. Get to the next slide. I want to talk a little bit about the relationship between Emergency Rule 1, local eviction moratoria, and the governor's executive orders, because there has been some confusion in this regard about when Emergency Rule 1 ends, when the local moratoria will end. So Emergency Rule 1 is statewide. It applies to all the courts, all the state courts, and it's issued by the Judicial Council, and it ends 90 days after the emergency declaration terminates. Now, that's one eviction moratorium that we have in the state right now. Another layer of tenant protections is the county eviction moratoria. The county eviction moratorias are by county, and those are supported, both Emergency Rule 1 and the county eviction moratoria are supported by the governor's executive orders. There's one executive order called N3820 or Order 38, which supports Emergency Rule 1. It suspends various statutes so that Emergency Rule 1 can go forward and not be in conflict with the law. That's what it does. And we'll talk a little bit more about that later. But that's Order 38. It doesn't have an end date. All right. And then we have Executive Order N2820 or Order 28. And that originally ended on May 31st. but it's been pushed out several times, and it now ends on September 30th. So if nothing changes between now and September 30th, then the Order 28, the one that supports the county moratoria, will expire. And the county moratoria would then, the idea goes, the county moratoria would then no longer be in effect. They wouldn't be supported by the executive order anymore, and state law would come back into effect with respect to the county moratoria. But because there's no end date for Emergency Rule 1 or the governor's executive order supporting Emergency Rule 1, Emergency Rule 1 would still be in effect even after September 30th, even after the county moratoria go away. And so landlords seeking to evict a tenant really have to overcome both layers. They have to overcome the county moratoria and the statewide Emergency Rule 1. So that's something that is important to keep in mind. If we can get to the next slide, then I'll talk about Christensen versus California Judicial Council, which is our lawsuit against Emergency Rule 1. In this lawsuit, we're representing two landlords. They're both retirees, Peggy Christensen and Peter Martin. Peggy rented to a tenant, and he brought in his girlfriend. He subsequently left the apartment, and she stayed there, and Peggy felt bad for her, and she let her stay. But she started damaging the property. She started creating a nuisance. She got lots of complaints from neighbors. And so Peggy tried to evict her, but she wasn't able to because of Emergency Rule 1. Now Peter owns a 27 space mobile home park, and he had a tenant that seemed to be caught up in drug issues. There was a search warrant served on his home. He had been arrested on drug and firearms charges, and so he tried to evict him for being involved in drug related activities. And he wasn't able to do that because of Emergency Rule 1. And both of these tenants are not paying rent. So it's really putting Peggy and Peter in a tough spot, like I imagine many of you are in. The suit is currently in Kern County Superior Court, and it makes two major points. One is that Emergency Rule 1 is an exercise of legislative power. It's the idea that the judiciary should not be making policy. It shouldn't be weighing the interests of society and picking winners and losers and saying that, you know, we're going to put the burden of the coronavirus pandemic on landlords. That's not something the judiciary gets to do. The second part of it is that the judiciary ignored all of the pre-existing laws that say summonses have to issue at this point. Defaults have to issue at this point. It ignored all of the legislature's mandates that control how lawful detainer actions go. So let me get a little bit into that. So we make three claims that raise these two points. The first claim is a separation of powers claim. The California state constitution explicitly divides power amongst the three branches of government: legislative, executive, judicial. And it says people who wield a certain kind of power can't wield any of the other two kinds of power. So someone in the judiciary, for example, can't exercise legislative or executive power. And that's really what has happened here. When the Judicial Council issued Emergency Rule 1, part of the report that accompanied Emergency Rule 1 said, the pre-existing eviction moratoria, the pre-existing help for tenants, it's not enough. We have to step in. And that's something that they're not allowed to do. And again, when the Judicial Council considered amending Emergency Rule 1 to have it sunset in August, they ultimately didn't do that. They pulled back. But at one point, they considered amending Emergency Rule 1 so that it would sunset in August. And when that happened, the Judicial Council explained, you know, the legislature wasn't in session when we issued Emergency Rule 1. Now they are. They weren't there to address this housing issue. So that's why we stepped in. Again, this is just more evidence of the fact that the Judicial Council stepped into the legislature's role. It picked winners and losers. It weighed the interests of society, and it struck a balance, and it's not allowed to do that. Judges, courts are supposed to apply the law, not make the law. And that's what they did here. So that's one. The second claim that we bring is the California state constitution requires that the rules issued by the Judicial Council not be inconsistent with statute. And of course, Emergency Rule 1 is inconsistent with all of the procedural provisions regarding how unlawful detainer actions are carried out. All of the statutory provisions saying summonses issue at this point, default issue at this point, default judgments issue at this point. It's inconsistent with all of those, but it's inconsistent with more than that. It's also inconsistent with just your right to have to be able to evict someone, your right to reentry, your right to possess your property. These are all statutory rights that Emergency Rule 1 ignores and is inconsistent with. And so that's the basic claim for the second one. We expect that the government's response would be that Order 38, the executive order supporting Emergency Rule 1, allows the Judicial Council to issue Emergency Rule 1. Now, I want to get a little bit into Order 38 and what it does, because it's pretty important. So Order 38 was issued under the governor's authority under the Emergency Services Act. The Emergency Services Act allows the governor to suspend certain statutes, under certain conditions. And so the argument is that Order 38 suspends all of these statutes that Emergency Rule 1 is inconsistent with. And because those statutes are suspended, Emergency Rule 1 isn't actually inconsistent with them. And so Emergency Rule 1 doesn't violate this constitutional provision saying rules issued by the Judicial Council have to be consistent with statute. Now, there are a lot of problems with that. This Emergency Services Act doesn't just let the governor suspend any sort of statute. He has to follow certain procedures. First, he has to declare that statute in question, statute being suspended, is impeding the recovery from the emergency at hand. He didn't do that in Order 38. He did that in various other executive orders relating to other things, but in Order 38, he didn't do that. And so he can't use the Emergency Services Act to suspend those statutes without having made that finding. It's one of those accountability mechanisms one of the very few accountability mechanisms that the legislature created to ensure that emergency powers aren't used just willy-nilly, right? So that's one problem with Order 38. Another problem is that the governor can only suspend certain kinds of statutes under the Emergency Services Act. He can only suspend regulatory statutes, statutes regarding the conduct of state business, and he can only suspend regulations. So those are the three kinds of items that the governor can suspend under the Emergency Services Act. Now, these unlawful detainer provisions are none of those, right? These are really about your ability to vindicate your right to go back into your property. It is not a regulatory statute. It's not something about conduct of state business, and it's not a regulation. So the Emergency Services Act just doesn't let the governor suspend these unlawful detainer statutes. Third, in Order 38, the order that supposedly supports Emergency Rule 1. In that order, the governor only suspended procedural statutes that would get in the way of the Judicial Council rules. That order only suspended procedural statutes. Now, what that means is that Order 38 can't be used to suspend, for example, the statutory provisions saying you have a substantive right to enter your property, to evict someone who isn't carrying out the terms of the lease properly. It doesn't suspend those statutes. And so those statutes are still in force, even if everything about Order 38 was fine, even if it followed the Emergency Services Act to the T. It doesn't suspend those statutes. And so Emergency Rule 1 is still inconsistent with those statutes, and it still violates the California constitutional provision that says rules have to be consistent with statute. That's another problem with it. And one of the very big problems, the fourth really big problem with Order 38, is that it really gives the governor's power, the suspension power, over to the Judicial Council. What Order 38 actually says is if the Judicial Council considers adopting a rule that would violate, that would be inconsistent with the statute, then I will suspend that rule. If it's a procedural statute, I will suspend that. I suspend that rule. And what this really does is it gives the choice of which statutes to suspend to the Judicial Council, right? Because what it means is whatever sorts of rules that the Judicial Council wants to consider, contrary statutes are suspended. It's not the governor saying this statute, this statute, this statute, these are impeding recovery, I'm going to suspend them. And so that's a problem, because the governor can't just give his power to another branch of government. The legislature was clear that the governor needs to make this decision, that the governor needs to declare these specific provisions are impeding recovery and need to be suspended. So necessarily, he cannot declare that whatever statutes the Judicial Council thinks are in the way, that those are impeding recovery. He doesn't even know what statutes they are yet when he signs the executive order. So that's a fourth major problem. And the final problem has to do with Emergency Rule 1's termination date. Emergency Rule 1, by its own terms, ends 90 days after the end of a declaration of emergency. So if the governor were to end the declaration of emergency today, it would have 90 days. It would be October before Emergency Rule 1 expired. And the problem with that is the governor only has suspension powers under the Emergency Services Act when there is a declaration of emergency in effect. So once his declaration of emergency ends, even if everything about Order 38 were kosher, it followed Emergency Services Act, and it encompasses all of these statutes that Emergency Rule 1 conflicts with, even if all of that were the case, as soon as the emergency declaration ends, all of those statutes come back into effect. The Order 38 goes away, the suspension goes away, and at that point, Emergency Rule 1 would conflict with all of these statutes and violate the California constitutional provision that says rules have to be consistent with statute. So those are the five main problems with Order 38. So Order 38 isn't properly issued, doesn't cover any of these statutes. And because of that, the Judicial Council could not have relied on Order 38 in order to issue the Emergency Rule 1. And because Order 38 is defective, that means that Emergency Rule 1 is inconsistent with all of the statutes saying unlawful detainer actions have to proceed a certain way. And because of that, it's unconstitutional. So that's the second major claim. The third major claim in Christensen versus California Judicial Council is rules issued by the Judicial Council can't be substantive rules. This, again, comes out of the California Constitution, which recognized that the Judicial Council, the courts, have to be able to issue rules for how courts conduct themselves. Or, you know, minor administrative details that the courts need to deal with. But it recognized that these sorts of rules can't step on the legislature's toes, that they have to be limited to procedural questions, they have to be limited to administrative issues, that the Judicial Council isn't here to make the law. So that provision is in the California state constitution. And clearly, Emergency Rule 1 is not following that, because it's not just a procedural question that Emergency Rule 1 is addressing. Very facially, it is. It's just talking about summonses and defaults and default judgments. But what it's really doing, its effect, is to say you don't really have a right to evict people anymore. That's a substantive determination. And that means it violates this portion of the California state constitution. One more note about Christensen versus California Judicial Council. This suit is one that, if we win, if everything goes well, what we ask for in this suit is for the court to order the Judicial Council to revoke Emergency Rule 1. And what that means is that would apply to everyone statewide. So even though we only have Peggy and Peter in the suit, if we win, Emergency Rule 1 would be gone for everyone. That still leaves the local ordinances, the local eviction moratoria that landlords will still have to worry about, but it gets one major barrier out of the way. So that's why we're really focusing on this suit. Let's see. So that is the case in a nutshell. If we get to the next slide, and this is really the end of the presentation, but I wanted to drop a quick note before I wrap up. Landlords are really used to doing things by the book, I think. You know, if everything's very orderly, you have a contract, you follow the contract, you honor your obligations. If something goes wrong, you go to court. I think landlords tend not to kick up a fuss. But this is really the time, like Dan was saying, this is really the time for you to be speaking up. It is really important that you make your voice heard, because it's because landlords often don't speak up as loudly as tenants' rights groups, for example, that they just keep getting burdened with additional regulations, additional sacrifices that they're forced to make for the community. You know, it's the sort of thing where you really need to go to your city council meetings, you need to go to your county supervisors, you need to email the Judicial Council, you need to get in contact with the governor's office, you need to talk to your local media, your local radio stations, you need to get out there, because you're fighting for your lives, you're fighting for your businesses, you're fighting for the idea that two people can still get together and come to an agreement and honor that agreement. These are not things that you should take lying down. You need to get out there and just tell your story. Tell your story about the sorts of problems you're having, the sorts of tenants that you can't evict, and the sort of people you've had to turn away because you're forced to keep these tenants. You just get out there, because it's that important. This is a moment when we're really talking about, as a state, as a country, how society should be structured, and it's not the time to be silent. So that's the end of my presentation, and let's go to Q&A.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Andres Segovia Show. Remember to like, share, and subscribe to stay in the know. If you want a question featured on the program, or you never know, it could be an episode all on its own, you can message me at any of the social media links available at my website, www.theandressegovia.com. Also available there are all the directories where you can find my show. Remember to also follow me on YouTube and Instagram, where other exclusive content resides. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the program. I'll see you on the next one.